Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to give you some advice for Mother's Day. When you hear the name Sterling, you might think of a classic shave, but this Mother's Day, we're looking at the bigger picture. This year, treat mom to the luxury she deserves with Sterling's full line of personal care items. We're talking about more than just soap. We're talking about rich body lotions, nourishing lip balms, and essential oils that turn any room into a sanctuary. From their handmade bath soaps to their long-lasting shampoo and conditioner bars, Sterling uses natural ingredients like shea butter and tallow for a quality you can feel. Give her an artisan experience this Mother's Day by heading to sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
In the NFL draft, the first three picks generally get the billboards and the savior labels. But number four? That's where the draft truly gets dangerous. From the gridiron dominance of Walter Payton to the lockdown mastery of Charles Woodson, the fourth overall slot is a historic goldmine of Hall of Fame legends and franchise-altering icons. Today, we're looking back at the players who proved you don't need to be first to be the greatest. This is a storied legacy of the NFL's draft's fourth and overall picks in history. We're joined, as always, by Ed Cleese. You're in the pig pen. Pigskin Dispatch's 32-day countdown starts now with slot number four. Welcome, everybody. We are in the top four of our countdown, and just 4 days to the National Football League draft. We are joined again by Ed Cleese to talk about the picks selected at number four. Ed, welcome back to the pig pen.
Hey, Darren, how are you today? The final four.
The final four, the final frontier we're at here. As we are Sunday before the Thursday draft starts round one. And so what's your overall look at with the history of the last 40-some years of the pick number fours in the NFL?
Well, first of all, we're going to be leaving a lot of gold jackets out of my top five, which I think at this point is kind of to be expected. You would expect as we get closer to number one that we're going to have better players and more Hall of Famers. Like we've talked about, that didn't really occur in our countdown until we get in the early teens. And then it seems to have kind of picked up the pace a little bit. Also, I was a little surprised on number four. There weren't quite as many as there wasn't as many colossal busts as I thought I might find. Recently, not a whole lot of names that really stand out to me. Anthony Richardson is trending one way. Sauce Gardner, current teammates, is trending the other way. And then you have somebody like Kyle Pitts that's maybe kind of in the middle. So just in recent years, we've kind of seen the gamut from teams that are probably very happy with who they picked, selected, disappointed, still waiting, for a player to turn the corner. But that's, recently and nothing too significant has stuck out. But going back in history, plenty significant has stuck out.
All right. Well, why don't we get into the history that you want to talk about here since 1980?
Yeah. So what we did, we started with number five in yesterday's pod is we're going to, now that we get to this level, we're going to do a top five busts and a top five best. And so we'll start with the busts, and number five all time fourth overall pick bust is a Super Bowl MVP. How's that for a contrast?
Wow.
Number five is Desmond Howard, drafted in 1991, wide receiver by the Washington Redskins. This is a strange case because, as you know, Desmond Howard wound up being the MVP of the Super Bowl for the Packers when they beat the Patriots as a punt returner. He returned a punt for a touchdown in that game. I believe he had another really long one, set something up. He had a phenomenal game. But he was a bust because you don't draft the fourth overall player in the draft to return punts. And that's essentially all he did. He had an 11-year career. He caught 123 passes. So you do the math, we're right there at about 10 to 12 catches per season. And in his last 5 years, he only caught 18 passes. And he also wasn't a particularly good kick returner. He just returned punts. And as somebody that was a fan of the Redskins and was very excited to draft him, I can tell you that he belongs on the bust list.
Ooh, okay. I think that's the first time I've ever heard a Super Bowl MVP being a bust.
Yeah, that one game could not save him from where he belongs on this list. He's had a very nice career in the media on ESPN. I think he's done quite well for himself. So I think he's okay with being on my list probably. Number four is Brent Fulwood, taken in 1987. a running back by the Packers, a guy that I really didn't remember very well. He did make one kind of random Pro Bowl where he had like 900 yards and five touchdowns in a season, but he only had 1,700 career yards. And somewhat in the notes about him, he was in a game in 1990. He claimed he was sick and he took himself out of the game. And then he was spotted at a nightclub that night in Miami. And it sounds like right after that, he was traded to the Browns. He got zero carries.
Then he really got sick.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Good one, Darren. He got really sick. He got traded to the Browns. The Browns gave him zero carries and he was out of the league.
Oh boy. Little brown bottle flu, maybe.
Yep. Yeah, really. Number three is a name I bet you'll remember, because especially from his college days, is Keith McCants, taken in 1990, a defensive end by the Bucks. Had a six-year career. Over those 6 years, only had 13 and a half sacks. He wound up, and again, he only played 6 years. And he played for the Bucks, the Oilers, and the Cardinals. So if you're only in the league for 6 years, you're the fourth overall pick, you're getting passed around like that, it pretty much means that nobody's particularly happy to have you. He did. Yeah. Do you remember
two of those teams were happy with their home city?
Exactly. do you remember the Kevin Gilbride, Buddy Ryan fight on the sidelines when they were the Oilers coaches? When Buddy punched Kevin Gilbride?
I vaguely remember, yeah.
Well, Keith McCants is the guy that broke that up. So he does one memorable highlight in his career. Unfortunately, he became a Marine police officer. He was the first Black Marine, like Marine life, like by the ocean, that kind of Marine.
Oh, okay,
he was almost like a wildlife officer. He was the first ever Black Marine police officer. And he unfortunately died of what they think was an apparent drug overdose at age 53. Mm. So kind of a sad postscript to his career. But I remember him. I remember him wearing those creamsicle uniforms and things just not working out too well.
Okay. All right. Who else do you have?
Number two is the same position. We're going to go Aaron Curry, drafted in 2009, a defensive end by the Seahawks. This is just a bust. He was like one of those combine freaks, like a physical freak. He had five career sacks, only two full seasons in Seattle, traded to the Raiders for a seventh-round pick, and then was quickly out of the league. So, you know, it just did not work out one bit.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it. All right, who's your top bust?
I hate talking about the off-field stuff, but there's no way to talk about this guy without, and this is an incredible bust. This is Art Schlichter, a quarterback taken in 1982 by the then Baltimore Colts. First of all, his numbers, he was 0-6 in his career with a three touchdown to 11 interception ratio. So that's obviously ridiculously terrible, but that's not the story with him. He has probably one of the saddest cautionary tales about gambling. As someone who may or may not like to sometimes partake in wagering, it really is a cautionary tale for anybody to listen to his story, because it sounds like it goes all the way back to college. It sounds like he may have had some cover when he was at Ohio State from handlers and coaches that maybe knew he had a problem and kind of covered it up and didn't let it get out. There wasn't necessarily like any kind of like fixing games issues, but he did wind up getting suspended for a season by the NFL because he turned in some people. He was afraid they were going to try to get him to throw games or something like that. But the long story short, sounds like this is a lifelong, lifetime, in and out of prison, all kinds of trouble that he just could not shake it. And he admitted that, you know, he was so distracted early in his career that he had no chance to succeed as a player because he just couldn't shake the ghosts. So it really says, it sounds like it's just continued. So like a very rough story. It's sad. It stinks. But yeah, I mean, that's a draft bust.
It's definitely a disease, gambling, you know, just like any other disease. It's a bad thing, and bad on families too. So
yeah, could not shake it.
All right, well, let's get into some better news here. Let's talk about some happier.
Well, the top five is really solid, and you're going to say that it's solid because I'm going to cut. There's three Hall of Fame honorable mentions that aren't in it.
Let's take a break for a moment to tell you about a new product so that you can take and put your football knowledge that we feed you each and every day to the test. It is the Pigskin Trivia Drive on pigskindispatch.com. You're the quarterback. You call the shots, choose your play, grind it out with a run, pick up steady gains on a short pass, or risk it all with a long pass for a massive chunk of yardage. It isn't just a quiz. It's a march for glory. It's the Pigskin Trivia Drive. Remember, when the huddle's over, when you picked your play, the faster you answer, the more yards you gain. Hesitation is the enemy of the end zone. Keep those chains moving. Cross that yellow line to reset your downs and earn a critical audible. Stuck on a tough defensive look? Use those audibles to strip away two wrong answers and find your open receiver. Watch the play clock. You've got just 25 seconds to make the read. Take too long, and it's a 5-yard penalty for delay of game. It's game action. In this stadium, your brain is the engine, but the clock is the opponent. The mission is simple. Score as many touchdowns as possible in 5 minutes, and when the clock hits zero, your score hits the global leaderboard. Are you a bench warmer or a Hall of Famer? Step up to the line. Your drive starts now on pigskindispatch.com, the Trivia Drive. Don't let your football history knowledge go to waste. Try the Pigskin Trivia Drive on pigskindispatch.com. And now, let's get back into our program.
There's three Hall of Fame honorable mentions that aren't in it. Edrin James is not in my top five.
Ooh.
Derek Thomas is not in my top five.
Wow.
And Kenny Easley is not in my top five. So we're talking about three big names right there, Darren.
Yeah, definitely.
Not make my top five.
Yeah, definitely is. Well, there's a lot of Hall of Famers in the group you're talking about. So
all three of those guys were, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so go ahead.
Number five is a current player. That is Trent Williams, taken in 2010 by the Redskins. He's had a 15-year career so far. It's going pretty strong. He had a bunch of Pro Bowls in Washington. He was a little bit overlooked. He did have some league suspension issues there. He got in a little bit of trouble early in his career that probably held him back just a tad. But then as a 49er, he's just taken off. Like, he got into that Shanahan scheme. He's a mauler. That's probably my number one thing about Trent. He is a beast. He's a lot of left tackle, right? So we always think great pass protector, which he is. But mm-hmm. he is a road grader, run blocker as well. He is a dominant force. From the ages of 33 to 35, he was all-pro first team all of those years. That is really impressive. I just wrote down mauler. That's what I think of when I think of Trent. He probably didn't maximize his gifts in Washington. A lot of that being not of his own problem. That's dysfunctional organization. But once he got into a good spot in San Francisco, he has cemented his Hall of Fame career.
Yes, a lot of times just a change of scenery and blocking schemes and offensive strategy. It makes a big difference because some players are adapted better to play in some schemes than others. So
yeah, and he's been a great fit in San Francisco for sure. With number four, we're going to stay in the exact same position. We're going to go a little bit earlier. We are going to talk gold jacket here. We're going to have to talk about a Raven, Darren. We're going to talk about Jonathan Ogden, taken in 1996. Oh, yeah, 12-year career. He was in the Pro Bowl and or All-Pro in all of his seasons, years 2 through 12. So, like, his rookie year, he wasn't. But then from then on, he was considered right around the best offensive lineman in the league during that like mid-90s to mid-2000s range. Pretty much the best we've ever, and that was in the league at the time. You know, difficult again to like talk about how do I compare him to Trent. It's flipping a coin, you know what I mean? So right. I thought they both deserved to be in the top five, just a tad ahead of those other guys I mentioned. So I made him 4 and 5.
Yeah, definitely another great player you're talking about there. So yeah, very good blocker. All right, who do you have at three?
At number three, this is the one that I'm going to guess probably surprises some people or sticks out a little bit, and that's Chris Dolman. He was taken in 1985, defensive end by the Vikings. Actually, he was taken as a linebacker, and he got off to a bit of a slow start. They transitioned him to defensive end, and he exploded. Now, this is kind of interesting, Darren, because we talked about Joey Browner and we've talked about Keith Millard in our that we've spoken about so far. And Dolman was drafted in 85. So those like mid 80s to late 90s Vikings defenses had Hall of Fame level talents. Now, Browner and Millard didn't play long enough. We talked about that to get there. Dolman did. First of all, he had 21 sacks in 1989. He was not the defensive player of the year because Keith Millard was, who had like 20. They combined for like 40 sacks between the two of them that season. And then he had seven more seasons, Darren, after his 21 sack season. Dolman had seven more seasons with 11 or more sacks. He's fifth all time in sacks. Unfortunately, he passed away of, like, I think a brain cancer in 2010, but he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. He got there in time, I believe. I think he was inducted and before he passed away and got his actual gold jacket. I think he's one of those probably overlooked Canton guys. He didn't play for the Vikings his whole career. He wound up bouncing around a little bit. Maybe one of those guys that, you know, just didn't stand out quite as much as some of the other edge guys that we think of. But man, Dolman was awesome, and he was super consistent.
Yeah, definitely. He was a beast. And that whole, it was like the new resurgence of the Purple People Eaters when those teams with Dolman and Millard and all that.
They just couldn't get the offense right.
Yeah. A couple of missed kicks and things like that, too. Yeah. Kasha. All right. So who do you have two?
Number two might be controversial as well, but I'm going to stand behind him. He is a guy that does not have a gold jacket. I think he will. Some people think he won't. And some people might think I'm crazy for putting him over some of the guys that I have him above. But I've got Philip Rivers as my number two. Quarterback taken in 2004 by the Giants, if you remember, of course, the kind of odd draft night day trade. But of course, he was a Charger. He had zero starts his first two seasons. And then he made every start for the next 15 years. I love that stat. You'll notice in doing this exercise, Darren, I'm a little partial to the guys that play, to the guys that are always there. 15 years, no missed starts. That's a big deal to me. And then listen to this, Darren. 12 out of 13 years, he passed for over 4,000 yards. 12 out of 13. Eighth all-time in yards, sixth all-time in touchdowns. Name the best receiver he ever threw to.
McCardle?
Yeah, right. I didn't even know. Yeah, right, exactly. Now, he did have Antonio Gates, obviously.
Yeah, he did.
For a big part of his career, he had Tomlinson in the backfield. Definitely a major help. But this is a guy that has just produced and produced and produced. And I think we can both admit, in a average at best organization, it's not like they were handing him all of these great tools and keys and stuff, and he was kind of buried out there in the West Coast a lot of the times. You know, it kind of felt like the Chargers were always going 9-7, 10-6. And I think that Rivers got blamed for some of that, for like not reaching the heights. I know that we judge quarterbacks with rings. I personally think he is better, clearly better than Eli, the guy that he was traded for on draft night. That is a big argument because Eli does have the two rings. Where are Rivers' rings? That's usually what we come back to. But I look at it, I say Rivers did everything else better. He did it for longer. He was far more consistent. And had he been in a little bit of a better situation, I think he would have been equal to or as even more successful.
So you're saying he was the second best quarterback in the 2004 draft?
Yeah, right. No, you know what? I think you'd have to put Big Ben ahead of Rivers because he does kind of match the numbers and he got the ring. So if you want to use that as a tiebreaker, that's fine. But I'm not going to overlook all of these numbers for Rivers and this incredible consistency when comparing him to some other quarterbacks.
Hey, I mean, I have no problem with him being up there. I think it's a good selection at number two, especially when you can be a grandfather and come off your couch and come play in the NFL.
Yeah, what he did last year was pretty impressive. It really was. Yeah.
All right. So, who do you have as your top pick?
You know, number one wasn't that hard. I waffled a little bit, but number one is Charles Woodson, taken in 1998, cornerback by the Raiders. He had a career in two acts. He was, both of the acts were excellent. So he was the defensive rookie of the year, and then he had 8 years in Oakland and 7 years in Green Bay. So 15-year career, almost split right down the middle. He was the defensive player of the year for the Packers in 2009. That's a big award because now you're in the group now with J.J. Watt and Lawrence Taylor and Bruce Smith. You know, we're talking these names, and Woodson is in that group. He led the league in interceptions twice. He had 65 in his career. He scored 11 touchdowns. You know what put him over the top for me, Darren? 16th all-time in solo tackles. So he was doing his thing out on the edge, blowing, you know, taking receivers out of the game, making plays, and getting in there and making tackles. A consistent force, won the Super Bowl with the Packers, was, you know, second best player on that team, maybe even first. You know, so a great player, an incredible pick, and he's number one.
All right. Well, I mean, I think it's a pretty solid top five. I think my one argument would be I think that Derek Thomas maybe should have been on there, maybe over one of the tackles. I'm not sure which one. Take your pick. You have a guy that played 11 years, 9 Pro Bowls, Hall of Famer, 126 and a half sacks. You talk about, you know, consistency. This guy was on the field a lot for 11 years with the same team. I think he had one season where he only played 12 games. Everything else was 15, 16 games.
He started. When I looked at Thomas, what two things kind of put him down the list for me, and that would be that he waned a little bit in his career. His best years were his, like, first 4 years. And then I viewed him a little bit as a real pure pass rushing specialist. He didn't make a lot of plays. Like we talked about how Terrell Suggs led the NFL all time in tackles for loss in addition to sacks. Mm-hmm. Whereas like Thomas was more that pure edge rusher. Now, in terms of that pure edge, there's nobody that was a whole lot better than Derek Thomas. That's true. The guy had 7 sacks in one game. So, I mean, you know, I mean, that's incredible. And he was my last cut of those five. And yes, you could certainly make an argument to take out one of the tackles.
In all fairness, I don't think tackles for loss were counted until his last year.
That's very possible.
And it wasn't an official stat until 1999. So
I just don't remember him being as much of a disruptor as some of the other edge guys beyond the pass rushing. Now, like I said, you're taking a list of 8 or 9 guys that are either in the Hall of Fame or will be, and you have to make a top five out of it. So, you know, you're going to cut somebody that makes some fan base upset. But the other thing is, you know, his accident and his death, it was early. You know, he was still kind of going. So we never really got to see maybe exactly where he would have wound up, which is obviously terrible and very unfortunate.
Well, this is one case, I think, maybe just to settle this, because you talk about the last 45, 46 years. I like to look back the whole 90 years of the NFL draft at this slot. And I probably, with the names I'm going to tell you, the 5 you just said wouldn't make the top 5 at this selection. Because we have 1944, Otto Graham was drafted. Not by the Browns, but by the Detroit Lions that year, because the Browns weren't part of the league yet, and he went off to war. Gail Sayers was drafted in 1965 by the Bears. Bob Greasy in 67 by the Dolphins. Mean Joe Green, 1969 by the Steelers. And John Hanna was in 1973 by the Patriots. But probably the biggest one of them all, Walter Payton, was taken in 1975 by the Bears at that. So I could probably have an argument for probably 6 of those guys would be above the 5 we just talked about in the modern era. So
yes,
really some legends, 13 in all Hall of Famers with everybody we talked about so far from that. So we're starting to get in consistently big numbers here of Hall of Famers at the selection. Our most popular position drafted has been tackle. You talked about some pretty good tackles there when you're talking, you know, John Hanna and Jonathan Ogden and Trent Williams, so and others. So that's a pretty good thing. And our draft stat of the day takes us to the quarterback position. And of the top 25 quarterbacks with the most career touchdown passes. 15 of them were taken in the first round. No surprise there. The other 10 were taken in the second round. Third was three, fourth was one, sixth was one, ninth and 12th each had one. But of the top four quarterbacks, there were more taken in round two than there was in round one. If you can believe that, Drew Brees and Brett Favre were second round picks. Peyton Manning is the only one that stays in that was the first round pick in the top four. So, of course, Tom Brady being the other one with a later round pick. So it's just kind of an amazing fact. You sit there and you think about the quarterbacks, you know, being these first round picks, and that's true to a certain point, but there's been some gold in the later rounds too.
Right. Yep. It was a great group to look back on.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's only going to get better from here because we are going to go to pick number three tomorrow as we continue the countdown, get ready for the NFL draft, talk a little bit about some history and some great legendary players. Ed, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
We'll see you tomorrow, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know that. Can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you got to do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.